Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching.
This is a very exciting episode. We are going to be talking about Erin's new book. She is the published author of Blooming Through Loss, Tending to Grief with the Bloom Path. And I have the honor to interview her so our listeners can hear one of her first of many, I'm sure, interviews about her book. And we are just going to talk about her book, and it's live on Amazon. So if you are inspired by this interview and want to know more, please go and order it and get the book. I think every human should read it. Of course, I'm not biased or anything. So Erin, how does it feel to be a published author?
You know, it's almost like I feel like I'm vacillating between the joyfulness and the hope of all of it. And, you know, the hope that this helps a lot of people. And then also just going through the whole writing process, there was so much love and joy in that. So all of those kind of more positive emotional states. And then I also then, you know, turn a little bit into sometimes like the fear of being this vulnerable, of sharing my story in the book, but also just putting out a piece of work for, anybody that anybody can access, right? Like it feels both the hopeful piece and also the highly kind of vulnerable and a little bit of fearful piece as well. But overall, I would say, despite the conflicting emotions, there's a lot of gratitude because this book has been in work in progress for many, many years. And I really wanted to push this book out this fall when it was ready, but it wasn't quite ready because I had to go through more permissions and different things like that. But I find it just fascinating and something that has some level of spiritual context in that this book is being released in the month of my deceased daughter's birthday. Her birthday is April 28th, and I'm going to be having my launch on the 27th. And that was not planned initially. It was all about trying to get this out sooner. So I kind of lean into those cues or those moments of hope that keep showing up around this book to help keep me buoyant as well as I navigate the release and what is to come.
Wow, so much there. And I can feel the range of emotions. And I think there's something so significant about the fact that the book is being launched in the month of Evelyn's birthday. That's fantastic. There's just something so synchronistic about that. And it's in spring, the garden and the blooming. So that's something that I think about a lot with, I associate with spring, is that blooming, that new beginning and the renewal that comes with spring. So there's so much there, so much meaning that's coming up for me as I hear you talking about the process of the path that you took and the journey that you've been on that has spanned years. So can you tell us a little bit about your inspiration for the book?
Well, I think I need to go back to kindergarten. I remember writing the story about a mouse at home, and it wasn't a homework assignment or wasn't any, it was just something that I felt compelled to do. And I remember when I finished it. And obviously it was probably like a sentence per page or something. Just the finished product of that and like handing that over, to my mom, I felt so happy. and I can remember that feeling as a kid, like that sense of enjoying writing and enjoying the process of creating something. And so fast forward throughout my career, it's always been a part of me to have writing and whatever component that might be. So I started as a high school language arts teacher, and then I worked more in policy crafting frameworks and developing those. And then moving into my role at university, did a lot of writing and editing there. And when I left that role and decided to stay home with my two living kids, it felt like there was a little bit of the missing piece around an intellectual craft or in creating something that is coming from both the heart and the mind. So that's all like very tangible inspiration that I was finding a way to connect the dots of my past. I'm not that intentional. I just am pretty good at like looking at what's happened in my past and trying to kind of weave together what that means for me in the future as well. So there's that. And then on a more kind of mystical and spiritual level, I really do think there were downloads from another source into my brain, from a higher power, from universe, whatever people want to say, as some of the words would flow out of me. I'd be like, oh yeah, did I just write that? You know, like go back and read it. And like, yeah, this feels really congruent and inspired to use that word inspiration. And then, of course, the key to all of this has been the birth and death of my firstborn daughter and how that has transformed the way that I view the world, the way that I think and create. And so you'll see a lot of that nuance and in the space within the book that is inspired by Evelyn and her just love. And so there are a lot of different sources of inspiration, and then just people as well, from, you know, former language arts teachers to American lit professors in college to Dylan Thomas as a distressed poet in high school and writing about him. And like, I don't know, there's always just that underlying piece there for me. And so when I brought it all together, it was an act of love, because I always thought I was going to write more of a new age coming of age Little Women type story set in modern America with very different story and plot lines for four younger women, loosely based on myself, my sisters, our childhood, that sort of thing. And so I'd go to the writers group here in town and try to get words out for that. And I would only get some like dialogue pieces here and there that I'd write down, and they were not coming to me. They were not good. And I sat down one day, and this is what was meant to flow out of me, this type of writing, which is a little bit different than more of the academic writing I'm used to, and then the writing in terms of trying to write a kind of like a historical fictionalized tale of Little Women in modern day. So it's not like I exactly chose this from the onset, but I feel so much gratitude. And I do think it was all from this open-heartedness, from a place of love. So yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love from the memory of you as a kindergartner with that book, that finished product, and wanting to show it to your mother, and that sharing of a finished product is something that brings me to a question about your thoughts and feelings about sharing your book. It's out, it's on Amazon, people are going to read it. What are your thoughts about that?
Yes. So my initial thought is that I hope it brings hope to whoever reads it. And I know it can get quite nuanced throughout the book. So it may make sense for, you know, if you're really early on in your grief, to come back to certain parts of the book later, or if you're, you know, many, many years out, I think this can be a really helpful tool to look at grief from 10, 20 years ago as well. And so I just hope that in doing so, and us surfacing grief as a topic, not only does it create more hope and health for the reader and for whoever shares in that, but that it also helps us as a society continue to have conversations around grief and loss in a way that maybe are based more in community and really help with collective healing, given that the topic has traditionally been quite taboo and so many different types of voices have been completely left out of the topic and sharing their experiences. And so it's something I think that we need to use also as a way for us to advocate for better policies around grief and loss and how we support one another and what resources are available to support ourselves and other too. So yeah, at the collective level, it's that, but at the individual level, it's really a hopeful story of how you can scaffold your experience after grief and loss to live a life that you really want to live despite the heartache and the pain. So that's the synopsis, I guess. And I do have it also out on Barnes and Noble as of, I think, today. I'm not in stores at this point. This is just like the first go, but you can find it online there too, I think.
Okay. So listeners would be able to find it on Barnes and Noble, and they would also be able to find it on Amazon.
Correct.
And it'll be available in print later.
The goal is that it will also be available in print in brick and mortar places, like the actual box store, you know, Barnes and Noble, rather than just their website. And that it will also, it's also going to be available in ebook here, not pretty soon. And that'll originally be on Amazon as well. And then as far as the hardback copy situation goes, I have no idea. So if anybody's listening and knows what to do about that, let me know.
Yeah, reach out if you know the secret sauce to getting that hardback cover, hardback version in. So I want to go back to what you said about that, the way that we approach grief and loss as a society, and how we can restructure, reframe, and perhaps improve the way that we care for people who are grieving. And that brings me to a quote that comes from your book. And it has resonated with me on so many levels. It's not just, you know, with grief and loss, but it's just the idea of vulnerability and having a space for vulnerability in our society. And I'll read the quote and then ask you to just kind of speak on that. And you mentioned of kind of channeling and having divine help with your book. And I wonder if this also came from that, but it is, "There needs to be more availability for others to witness your pain and for you to feel safe being witnessed in pain." Can you speak to that a little bit more of where that came from and the wisdom behind that?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely draws on my personal experience with grief and loss and just feeling like I did not have that safe space initially as I was trying to do a lot of meaning making. And yes, it can be helpful to do a lot of that meaning making in places where you really aren't seen. But on the other end of it, if we can't show up as ourselves amidst grief and loss, then how can we heal? How can we help others heal? You know, that sort of thing. And it's a very painful experience for many people to be struggling and not feel like they can safely say anything or talk about it because, especially in today's culture, right? Like social media is everywhere because it just got recorded on social media or because of this. And it's like, sometimes we have to get through and process through some of those very painful, angry thoughts, feelings, and beyond. And we shouldn't have to do that alone because we're already doing it alone because we feel so alone and feel like we can't trust, which then adds another layer on top of the grieving process in itself. And that can be really harmful to, you know, mental health as well as just health in general. So I think that is where that statement really came from when I was writing this book, is to just have a call out to the public to say, you know, when people are going through a grief and loss experience and maybe they are acting out or things maybe don't look similar to what you knew them as, still hold space for them. And also because in the end, they will not be the same person that you knew too. And I think we're so afraid of change. We're so afraid of shifting things with inside of us that we can often just stuff our grief and move forward and not make change in our life, even though we know deep down we want to and need to. So that is a lot of the process of, I think, what can happen within people when they're struggling with a grief and loss experience.
As you were talking about that need to be able to be seen in pain and how that is related to our healing, it made me think about what I heard Gabor Mate say about trauma. And he said that trauma when you're a child, so childhood trauma, is not having someone witness your pain and not be in that space where you have an adult who can guide you through the pain. So then as a child, you are in pain or the world is so big and you don't understand what's going on. And the adults in your life that you depend on aren't witnessing that pain. They're not acknowledging that pain or confusion or anger. And so you're left with this abandonment that goes with that pain, which then becomes trauma. And so I was thinking about that in terms of the grief experience and how you're already in a vulnerable position, having lost something or someone of great value. And as you said, when you go through that grieving process And you will come out of that grieving process a different person. You'll be changed. It will change us. It changes us. So there's that too. And one of the things that I appreciate about your book is that it's a guide for that new path that you will need to create in the grief process or as a result of the grief process. And you can correct me if I'm if my interpretation is a little off, but that's how I interpreted the book when I was reading it. It definitely feels like you have a compassionate, wise guide that's holding your hand and reminding you it's okay to feel the way you feel. This is going to be new. You are restructuring how you navigate life now that you have this loss. And that is something that really resonated with me reading it, and that feeling of being witnessed, being understood, being acknowledged. I think that comes in the book itself through your narrative voice, through your voice. It's a very calm, compassionate, empathetic voice. So it feels like you see me. When I'm reading, I feel seen. So I wanted to share that in what you
That's
were
definitely
saying.
The best compliment I think I have ever received, regardless about the book or yeah. So thank you for that.
Well, there's so much power in the way that you talk about the grief experience and in the book, how it's evolves, or how the bloom path, and we'll get to that. But it definitely feels like the unfolding of petals. It feels like a blooming. And you use examples of you know, fictional or based, they're kind of fictional examples of someone going through the bloom path, and reading that, you see the changes. And throughout the book, there's that hope. There's that hope of, you know, that something good can come out of this tragedy or this pain. And that comes out in the writing and in the journey that you go on with the bloom path. So I do want to talk a little bit about the bloom path without being like spoiler alerts, but
yeah,
yes, the bloom path, because the title is Blooming Through Loss, Tending to Grief with the Bloom Path. And the bloom path is patented, you trademarked, sorry, trademarked, not
yes.
Patent, trademarked. And can you just speak a little to what the bloom path is and the inspiration behind it?
Yeah. So the bloom path is something that I have been developing over the past couple of years. And I needed the space to be able to do that, to be able to listen to whatever was kind of being filtered in from reflecting on my own grief and loss experiences, and then really listening to other people in their own loss, and really just being able to sit with the complexity, because I think I have felt robbed of that understanding of the complexity of loss. And that on a personal level was a way for me to really think about, well, why did I feel that way? And why do I feel this way? And I have to say, I think being situated at the at CU in the University in Arts and Sciences, amidst all the different academic disciplines, and seeing how important it is when we can come together across academic discipline, I mean, of course, across party line, but like even across academic discipline, to be able to really find more creative and better ways to support one another. And so even though while I was at the university, this model was not in my mind, it wasn't being developed, I think looking back, I can draw from that self-understanding that I was able to see in my role, kind of the nuance of things when you include a lot of different academic disciplines. And so the Bloom Path itself looks at 6 different internal touch points your grief will have with you, and 7 external touch points. And there are a million ways to apply it. Like there's so many different ways, but the book just takes you through a way throughout the whole storyline of how one person in the book applies the model to their grief and loss experience to not only look at what's happening with their loss, but to also look at their motivators and how they want to make change and what that looks like for them, and helps them move through that process too. And then at the more basic understanding of the Bloom Path, the book introduces you to it. So it gives you definitions and understanding about what each of these 6 internal touch points and 7 external touch points mean. And it's been iterated upon for quite some time, in that I started with a kind of inner flower of just you and your loss, and then all these blooms just floating around on the external. And then they got pieced to kind of be categorized, and then they got pieced to be internal and external. And then that got switched in the order that they were in. So there's been a lot of thought into this Bloom Path and how I think it can be really helpful for not only those who are grieving, but also for those who are helping people with loss, whether that's a professional coach or counselor or other roles. But yeah, it is, again, like going back to where I started with explaining, having the time to sit with this has made it more effective. And I feel so much gratitude to be able to do that as an author, as a creator, as somebody who owns their own business, versus if I was trying to create this within a certain system, right? Like that might've been more rushed and those sorts of things. So I just feel this has been a labor of true love and true understanding.
I love that you mentioned the complexity, because the Bloom Path really shows how grief touches every aspect of ourselves. It is whole in its effect on our lives. And often in society, if you look at our stories, our movies, our, you know, the things when someone dies and when there's a loss, it's so compartmentalized. It's like, okay, so you hear about the loss, there's maybe some emotion that the character shows, and then the funeral happens, and then there, depending on the story and depending on the movie and depending on how the character deals with the loss, there is a point at which it's like it never happened. And the person just, it's like, oh, they had a funeral, they had this, but there's, I haven't seen anything that really shows the complexity and the scope and breadth of the effects of grief that this book brings forward. So I appreciate that about the book. And one other thing that you mentioned as well, it's really good for people who are supporting the griever. The book does a great job of showing how we can understand and also recognize and appreciate what grief does and how it affects all of us and what it affects. And you spoke about roots in there. I think there were 5 roots, correct? There were 5 roots.
Yes.
And one of those roots, I'm not going to say them all, you have to read the book. But right? I love the receptivity. Is my favorite root.
It's mine.
Receptivity is the willingness to consider or accept new suggestions and ideas. I love that. That's a quote from the book. The idea of receptivity is just so important, because the willingness to consider or accept new suggestions and ideas, that's something that I think is necessary when we are moving through grief and loss, or anything for change for that matter, because grief and loss is a change. And that's such an important concept to really think about and apply to life and to apply to our interactions with others, because receptivity is something I feel we are lacking in society, when we're talking across the aisle and we're talking different beliefs. Receptivity is so necessary in the healing journey. Do you have anything to add to that?
That one was a lot of, I guess, a little bit of prayer and a lot of just like reiterating again, trying to find the word that held the most meaning for what I was trying to say, because acceptance is used a lot and it never resonated with me very much. And so I knew I wanted to find something a little bit different And when I came across receptivity, when I was thinking about how that fit into, you know, all these frameworks that I use with clients and as well as what's in the book, it was just like this weight was lifted off of my shoulders. In that we always want like a finite answer or a super clean answer. And that's what I feel like acceptance delivers. On the other hand, receptivity gives you more freedom and openness to be to explore what's going to work best for you, and not having to accept certain pieces of the loss, for instance, or not having to accept certain pieces of certain conditions. And yet, using receptivity as a way to be open to all the opportunities available to come, all the love that you can open up into. And it kind of creates this level of fluidity that you can ride the waves of grief. And I know that term gets used all the time in all spaces on grief and loss, all those waves or the ocean. But receptivity, I think, is one of those words that I use to help me do that, that I use to help me ride the waves of very difficult emotions or very difficult situations or challenges. And so receptivity, just as a word, that in itself, I think, is so powerful and a healthy tool to use, if that anybody could use and have in their toolbox, just that word.
Absolutely. And yeah, I love the idea of the openness of the word receptivity, that it allows you to be open to whatever. And there's no expectation there. There's no expectation for it to all be okay. Or, you know, the things that the heaviness of acceptance, I can definitely, I relate to that. I relate to that. And receptivity, I also relate to what you said about it being a lighter feeling. It is an opening up. It is a allowing. It is allowing for what you talk about in the book of the paradox. It's allowing that. It's allowing, it's the willingness, you know, to accept or consider. I love that, to accept or consider instead of just accept, or it's both. You can consider it. Considering it is a very light touch. You can sit here and I'll consider you, you know, this concept, this idea, this suggestion. I can let you exist. I don't have to do anything with you. I can consider. And I think the idea of consider is an invitation to maybe soften a little on this. You don't have to completely take it in, but you soften and you kind of allow it to exist within your awareness. And I love that. I love that idea. So I want to pivot a little to a concept that I, you know, when I read your book, I was like, wow, I really want to know more about this, because to me, the idea of brokenness, I have some resistance to that. And I'm going to own that I have some resistance to the idea of brokenness. I don't like to think of myself or others as broken, because to me, there's some weight there. But I love that it is juxtaposed with openness or wholeness. So you've got wholeness and brokenness that comes up a lot in the book. And I was wondering if you could speak to those concepts.
Yeah, I would not have come to those concepts without the death of my own daughter, I don't think. Because I think prior to that, I too would have, when I hear or think about brokenness, would have been like, wait a second, what is this exact, you know, what are we trying to say here? But I love this idea of the human condition. And we know, as being human, we have both our strengths and our challenges. And yes, that is a level of brokenness, but it's also a level of wholeness. Because we can't have our strengths without those challenges, really. And so we have to have that brokenness. And I talk about, like, you have to be broken open then into this, your heart breaks open when you are grieving. And I actually learned that from a dear woman here in the community, 73-year-old lady who had a lot of wisdom to share with me over 10 years ago. And like you just said, LaShawn, when she told me that for the first time, well, your heart is now broken open, I was like, what the hell? You know, like, okay. But it really did sit with me for so many years. And I think that that's the other piece that grief provides hope through, is by juxtaposing everybody's wholeness and brokenness. And so when we have a big grief experience, that brokenness might be magnified a lot more, as we maybe put a lot of guilt or self-blame on ourselves. And then on the other end of that, it might be elevated more too, as we open our heart, break open our hearts to put more love and kindness into ourselves. So it is this wholeness, but yet it's still this brokenness. And I know some people like this concept and I know some people don't. So I appreciate you bringing that up, because there is another person that I know that's not a big fan of the word broken. And so I'd love to hear, you know, what listeners think on that word too. And then if there are other thoughts on how we could maybe reframe that word as well. But for me, I had to put it in there because this started from early, early on in my grief and loss experience, has been a concept that's flowed with various clients and has really made a huge difference in people's lives. And then I've just seen it be a theme. And then on top of that, the Christian tradition really does espouse that we are broken. We come into the world, you know, we're broken with sin, by sin. We live in a sin world, you know, those types of things. So this idea of, you know, everything being in place perfectly, like, it's just not a background that works for me as the author. And I know I brought up, you know, how this relates to the Christian faith, but I have seen it in other faith belief systems as well. So that's where that all comes from.
Well, I love it because it really helped me tap into the concept of receptivity. So I recognize that I have a resistance to that word, brokenness. And as it was coming up more and more in the book, I was able to be receptive to it and like explore, like, what does that mean? And it must mean something different to you, Erin, than it meant to me. So I really appreciate you speaking on this, because I do think that there is definitely some value to considering that brokenness and broken can be something more than just a negative feeling, or a feeling that is no longer, because I associate broken with being like inaccessible, or that there's something wrong with it. I associate that with wrong. So this, for example, this tape recorder is broken, or this thing is broken. And when I think of broken, I think, oh, it no longer works. But I love the idea that you mentioned about the wise, a community member who talked about your heart being broken open. And then I started to think about breaking an egg. If you break an egg, you're letting out something to make something. And being broken open allows you to be able to allow in certain experiences into your life that you wouldn't probably be open to if something didn't happen to break that, to break you open. And so it really does expand my idea and my concept and my experience of the word. So I really appreciate that. So we are nearing the end of our time. So I'm wondering, is there anything else you want our listeners to think about, or anything you would like to say about your book?
Sure. Just about the book in general, you'll see my personal story. You'll see various composites of client, like, I'd say they're fictionalized, like you said, stories that really show how what is being laid out in the book can be applied. So it's not only like, here's what's laid out in the book, but you also see the application throughout for yourself. And then there are these running themes, and we've touched on a few that just go from the start of a book to the end. And then people can make meaning of them in however way that makes them feel good and feel heard and feel seen. And at the end of each chapter, there are activities that the reader can try. And while each of the activities kind of builds on the next, again, you can pick and choose what works best for you. and come back to some of them at a later time, or do them in the process that they're written in. It's really meant to be open in that way. So yeah, so this book came out on Friday, yesterday, yeah, or Thursday night. I was a little surprised because I was like, oh, I thought it was supposed to be Friday, but then here it is. So it's Blooming Through Loss, Tending to Grief with the Bloom Path. And I also have available on Amazon a companion journal that you can purchase as well that goes along with the book and gives you space for the end of chapter exercises, and then also gives you some space at the end of the journal to tell your story further.
Wonderful. So thank you so much. Usually we end our episodes with a coaching nugget of wisdom. And so the one coaching nugget of wisdom that I will leave everyone with, which is not really a coaching nugget of wisdom, it's just a plug for this book. Go out and buy this book, people. What are you waiting for? No, I invite you to check out Blooming Through Loss, Tending to Grief with the Bloom Path. You will not be disappointed. It is such a holistic view of grief, and it is a guide for those of us who are working through grief and loss. And we all do, because we're all human and we all have loss. So every human should get this book. Do you have anything to add, Erin?
Oh, no, just thank you so much for this time and holding the space for talking about the book. And one thing that got me really excited in this conversation is when you started talking about the egg, that concept was not a part of my book at all and didn't come into my mind. And it just gave me so much hope and gratitude and excitement about the possibilities with this book, that maybe these seeds that are planted will, you know, create these other ideas that I obviously had not even considered or thought about. So I just want to say thank you for sharing that, LaShawn, on that concept. And thank you for holding space for me to talk about the book today.
Yes. So please go ahead and look up that Blooming Through Loss, Tending to Grief with the Bloom Path by Erin Elder, our one and only. And we will have links in the description of this episode. So please go ahead and look for that. And we also have that on our social media as well. Thank you, Erin, for the gift of this book. It is a light that has been added to what could sometimes be a bleak and dark time in our lives. And it's also a light that has been added to the world. So thank you so much. So happy to be part of this. And I cannot wait to see what comes out of this, what will bloom from this experience. Thank you, Erin.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.